And now to share his or her experience, strength, and hope with us, we have Jackie.
Hi, I'm Jackie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. So I'll dive right into it, because I guess that's what you came here for. I come from an alcoholic home, like some to many of you. My parents got divorced when I was 7, and, you know, not to give my mom's qualification or anything, but it ties in a lot to my own drinking history. So after my parents got divorced was when my mom's drinking really picked up for a variety of reasons. My dad wasn't there to keep her in check anymore, and us kids were a little older, so she didn't have those controls anymore. And, you know, I watched my mom come in and out of AA when I was growing up, and it definitely jaded me. You know, my mom was the one with the problem, but at the same time, it, like, comparisons were drawn very early on between me and my mother. And, you know, I was told by a lot of people to, like, watch out and not, you know, I might have this, like, thing that I saw as a weakness of the will or whatever. And so, you know, really early on in life, I decided that I was never going to drink. And so it wouldn't be a problem for me. I also, you know, from growing up in this alcoholic home, learned a lot of things that later aided my alcoholism, like how to feel one way on the inside and look one way on the outside, and how to lie and how to deny reality. So that all helped. And, you know, I was never going to drink, and then I was a really, like, depressed and anxious kid. I was really high-strung. I've always been, like, very high-performing, but out of fear more than out of, like, a desire to do well. And I thought that I could, you know, beat this and really, like, differentiate myself from my mom specifically. And I thought, like, if I just wasn't like my mom in any way, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. So, like, I studied really hard in high school. My parents split up, like I said, and my dad, like, went to a better college than my mom, and my dad had an MBA, and I thought, like, if I just studied really hard, I wouldn't end up like that. So I did, and it became, like, this thing. And also, growing up and being sort of, like, the odd man out, like, I felt like my family was really dysfunctional, and everyone knew it, because my family was really dysfunctional, and, you know, most people knew it, because, like, my mom would, like, pick me up from school dances drunk, and she would, like, get arrested, and we lived in a small town, so sometimes, like, EMTs would come to my house, and then they'd also be, like, substitute teachers. You know, like, people knew, and I felt growing up, and I don't know if this is actually the reality, it took me some time in sobriety to realize that, like, the way I think other people feel about me sometimes comes from the way I feel about myself and not necessarily from them. But at the time, I was just like, you know, everyone feels really sorry for me, and not in a good way. Like, everyone thinks that everyone's looking at me and thinking, like, she's going to grow up to be this mess just like her mother. And that's where all this stuff came in. Like, I'm just going to just study my way out of this fucking place. And, you know, also, like, little icing on the cake is, like, growing up, like, a closeted gay kid and having that secret to hide. And I was never going to drink. And then I actually started taking antidepressants when I was 16, and they changed my life. I wasn't so anxious anymore, and I wasn't so depressed anymore. And, you know, I didn't tell my dad what was going on at home with my mom, but I started relying on him more, and he started, like, stepping up, and I finally had, like, some of the pressure off of me. Like, I wasn't taking care of everyone else so much, and that gave me some freedom to drink. And I thought, you know, I'm 16 now. I've learned enough about alcoholism to avoid it. And, you know, I finally had a social life. Like, I didn't have friends for a long time because I just was afraid of anyone, like, knowing me for a variety of reasons. But I finally, like, got invited to a party at one of the cool kids' houses, and it was really exciting, and I drank, and I loved it right from the start. You know, I had that aha moment. Like, I went and looked in the mirror that night and was just like, like, solution, you know? And right from there, my drinking was abnormal and problematic. The second time I drank alone. Drinking never struck me as something that had to be done in a group. And the second time I drank, I got in trouble. My dad, you know, I live with like two different parents. My mom was a mess, and my dad was not a disciplinarian. He just was like the divorced dad, and he didn't know what to do with me, and he worked a lot. He loved me a lot, and he like paid money for other people to do a lot of things for me. Not that he wasn't a hands-on parent, but like he was a kind of an old-fashioned dad, and he didn't know how to direct me. And the second time I drank, I was going to reward myself for studying on a Friday night for my finals by having a glass of wine. And I knew my dad wouldn't miss a glass of wine, but I drank the whole bottle. And, he would miss that. So instead of just, like, throwing it away, I hid it in my closet. And then he found it, and he was like, what's this doing here? Immediately, without even skipping a beat, my friend drank it. And then it's just like, then it started snowballing. He was like, so wait, your friend drank it, and then what? And I was like, she just left. And he was like, you let your friend drink a bottle of wine and then drive home. And I was like, no, and it's just like immediately getting into trouble. But at the same time, my grades were really good. And I had this like chip on my shoulder, you know, like no one helped me. And I did all this myself, and life has been really hard for me. So like back the fuck off, because I'm still doing really well. You know, that said, I started already in like high school. I graduated at the top of my class, but if I missed one more day of school, I wouldn't have graduated. And it was just like don't tell me to come to school. I do really well on tests. It was like that ego thing already cropping up. And then I went away to college, and I thought, you know, like this is it. I'm gonna get away from all these horrible people, like escaping the problem. And in my family, like, once you went to college, you could drink openly, and I did. And, the people that I made friends with in college, I'm dealing with the wreckage of my past still today, because, like, I didn't form friendships based on the things that I form friendships on now, like levels of compatibility. The people that I ended up being friends with in college were the people on my floor who wanted to get drunk the first night of college, and that was like fine with me. I was the ringleader, and suddenly it's like I was this goody two-shoes in high school, and suddenly like I was the one who was arranging for everyone to get really drunk. And bad things started to happen, but I was young, and I bounced back quickly, and I always thought it was like beginner's bad luck, you know, like no more tequila, and you know, I had all those things, you know, like only beer, never beer. Only drink before I go out. Only drink when I go out. Only drink mixed drinks. Only have a few shots. Mark a line on my hand for every drink I have. But, you know, it got worse and worse. And, like, my hangovers started getting worse. The things I did started getting worse. And, the consequences started getting worse. I also, like I said, like, I took antidepressants when I was a kid, and they really helped me. Pills like that have been an ongoing thing in my life, and, like, once I took antidepressants and they worked so well. Like, my dad, I never went to a doctor to get them. My dad just gave them to me. And that the same thing happened with Ambien and later Klonopin, but, like, Ambien's a large part of my story. I used to take it to party because, like, it was a real party drug when you're, like, half asleep. But, like, when I was in college, my roommate was away once, and I thought, you know, it was a Sunday night, and I was like, I'm just going to take an Ambien, have a nice sleep, and, like, start the week out right. And what happened is what normally happens to people like us, and I took, like, 8 Ambien. And it's like I had my intentions, but then once I was messed up, there was just no stopping me. And maybe I would only have one night, but, like, maybe I would take 8. And then I drank a bunch of vodka and tequila on top of it and was, like, all over campus and just a mess. And, like, I woke up in the hospital, of course, and this woman came to me there, and, you know, she was, like, a suicide counselor, and she was talking to me about, you know, did I try to kill myself? And I say this all the time in my qualification, but it only struck me later in life that it was, like, inherently problematic that the way I had fun or relaxed was identical to a suicide attempt. And, but, and, you know, I, I got out and I was still drunk, and then I remember like my roommate came home that night, and I was like 19 or 20 years old, and you know, I was like a big joke. I thought it was funny, but I was feeling bad by then. Like enough had gotten out of my system that I started getting that like, you know, that like knot in my stomach of like that like something's wrong feeling. And my roommate came back and she was like, "What happened?" And I was just like, I just started crying, and I was like, I think I might have a problem. And you know, my mom's in rehab right now. So like my mom had been in and out of AA since I was like 12. She'd been quite problematic since I was like 10. And she was in rehab for the first time then. And it's sort of like these comparisons that I always tried to avoid were becoming unavoidable. You know, I was hospitalized for my drinking and drug use, and my mom was in rehab at the same time. So I brought that up, and it was like, you know, the extent of the lies I can tell. Like, she was the first person I ever told my mom had a problem, you know? And even, like, I went to college with my brother, and we were the best of friends at school. We talked about everything. And when we went home, if my mom was drunk, we wouldn't say a word to each other about it. Like, living that way, when I look back on it now, is astounding to me. But then I felt better. And I just, it became a big joke. That whole night became a big joke, but it was like the first of many aha moments. And, you know, I began to think like it wasn't so much that I had a drinking problem, but that I had like other problems that made me drink. And the gay thing was a big part of it. So, you know, I went to like a Jesuit school, and I thought, and there weren't many gay people. It wasn't super gay friendly, but I thought, you know, I'll just move to New York and I can be gay there and, you know, my problems will be solved. And I moved to New York, and it didn't really work, I guess. And, you know, I was still drinking all the time, and I don't know, I like couldn't really come out of the closet, because like all my life I built up this thing of like, I'm going to be what people want me to be, or like what looks good on the outside. And like, I didn't envision gay as being a part of that. And you know, when I was younger, like people suspected, and it was hard to cover up. But like the second I started drinking, being gay and dating men was just not a problem. It made a lot of things really easy. And so, you know, I thought like I would stop drinking so much if I just got a boyfriend. And then I got a boyfriend, and I thought, you know, I would stop drinking so much, but I'm gay and I have a boyfriend, and like, I can't have a boyfriend without drinking. And then I broke up with him, and I thought, you know, I would stop drinking so much if I just had a girlfriend. And I decided to like move to another city to be gay again, because like New York isn't gay enough. So I moved to Paris for a summer before I was to start law school. And again, it's like my life still looked okay on the outside, and that's all that was important to me, no matter what was falling apart. Like, I left a job right before law school that, like, I was going to be fired from. And I that's, like, how I lived my life. Anywhere I went from the time I was in high school, like, I burned bridges, just, like, destroyed it, just, like set the place on fire on my way out. And same thing with that job. And I left, and I went to Paris, and I finally met a girlfriend. It was a beautiful romantic story. I came out of a blackout having sex with this woman, and she was my hostage. It was a nice relationship in that way, and you know. But the thing is, it's like I had the girlfriend. That was my last. I wouldn't drink so much if that was my last one, and I was still drinking so much. And like I had this period. Or this time right before I got this girlfriend, when I almost got sober, and I went to an AA meeting just to visit, just to check it out. And it's like at this point I had like the two sides on my shoulder, okay? And it wasn't like the angel and the devil. It was like my mom and my dad. Now see, as I was like going down, 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 my mom actually started getting better. And I did not expect that. She went to rehab twice. She like relapsed very soon after her first stint in rehab, and I thought that she was going to die. And I made my peace with that. And I distinctly remember like the last time she was drunk. It was like Easter, 2000 whatever, Easter like 9 years ago or something. And I just remember she was drunk and thinking, you know, like maybe life's just too hard for some people, and like maybe she just can't do it, and you know, she's gonna die, and that's unfortunate. But like, I didn't feel anything besides like, that's unfortunate. And like, I didn't believe in God, and I surely did not believe in AA because my mom had been like in and out of it for so long. But then my mom got better, and that was nothing short of a miracle. Like, as jaded, cynical, horrible, like alcoholic as I was, I couldn't say that like it wasn't a miracle that my mom got better. And I don't just mean she stopped drinking. My mom got better. Like, she stopped being horrible to me when we had fights. Like, she stopped, she used to, when we would have fights, she would like bring up the fact that like my grandfather on my dad's side had schizophrenia, and then like I took antidepressants. So she would be like, you know, you're fucking crazy just like he is, why don't you up your meds, like stuff like that. And she stopped doing that, and she became like a kind, loving, beautiful mother, like the one I remembered when I was a kid. And so there was her, like, living this lifestyle. She never told me to go into AA, which is like attraction rather than promotion. Like, I don't understand how you can watch your kid do the things I did and not tell them to get help. But she didn't, and I'm glad for it, because it would have pushed me further away. And then I had my dad with his pills, and he gave me Klonopin for my anxiety. I had really bad anxiety, especially after I drank. And I thought that Klonopin was better to me than going to AA meetings, so that kept me going for like another 6 months. And like, by the end, I was just in a cloud, you know, like I didn't drink every day because alcoholics drank every day, and my mom was an alcoholic. I wasn't an alcoholic, but like, if I wasn't drinking, I was taking Klonopin, and if I didn't take Klonopin, I would drink NyQuil, which I didn't think was drinking. Like, I didn't have a cold or anything, and I would take like several doses, but I was like, I'm not drinking tonight. And and if I didn't have that, like, there would be a night every once in a while when I didn't take anything, but I was just so sick, like restless, irritable discontent. And you know, I decided again that like New York is my problem again, and I went down to homecoming at college, you know, the place that I like left because it was the problem. And I just figured, you know, like, people in New York don't understand me. My friends in college understand me. Like, they all drink. Like, we all, like, party hard, and we work hard. But, like, I, you know, I wasn't working hard, but I, you know, I drank a lot. And so I went down to college, and I had, like, this night. And it wasn't the worst night ever. I think, you know, if it was my worst night ever, my friends wouldn't have been mad at me. And, you know, like, if someone else did something so I could like push off a little bit of the responsibility, there was no reason to get sober, but it was all me, you know? And there were a few things that were striking about that day. The night before, I got in late, and I didn't bring any Klonopin, and I didn't have NyQuil, and I didn't drink anything, and I couldn't sleep a wink. And it was just like, damn, you know, I can't sleep without something in my system anymore. And that morning when I was drinking, I remember thinking, I hope I don't black out today. And I always used to think, I'm not going to black out today, and here's how. But then it just became, you know, I hope I don't. You know, 50-50, but I hope it's not one of those days. But I knew I couldn't control it. And I didn't control it that day. I blacked out. Pee is a huge part of my story. I think it's important to share that. I wet the bed all the time. Someone told me at my first meeting that I didn't have to tell people that, but, you know, it's important to tell people. So I like, was at my friend's place, and I wet my friend's bed, and then I went wet my other friend's bed, and then they, like, put me on the floor, and I also peed there. So I woke up the next day, and they were just mad at me. They were so mad at me. And, you know, it was like my hangovers were so much worse. I was so physically ill. And I remember them saying, like, one of my friends was like, you know, we're not in college anymore. You can't do this anymore. And just saying, like, you know, seeing you like that was sad. Like, they weren't even angry. They were, like, disgusted. And I told my friend, she was like, you know, you can't drink like that anymore. And I was just like, I just had that little moment of honesty where I was like, I can't drink and not drink like that. And she said, well, then maybe you shouldn't drink at all. And I said, the thought of not drinking terrifies me. And I thought that she was, you know, really really newer stuff, because she was like, if the thought of not drinking terrifies you, I think that's a good reason to stop, because the thought of not drinking doesn't terrify me. And I didn't know that people like that existed. And, you know, it's just like, I had this window where I was driving, so I didn't have Klonopin, and I just wanted to drive home and get some Klonopin, and I wasn't going to drink anymore, but I couldn't make it. And I don't know how things, I don't know how it would have gone if I got it, but I didn't, I couldn't make it. My mom picked me up at this motel in Delaware and took me to my first meeting the next day, and I've been sober, clean ever since October 12th, 2008. And I knew that, like, for me to stop drinking, it had to get to the point where, like, anything is better than this. Because, you know, drinking was my friend before it was my enemy. It's kind of like being in an abusive relationship. Like, it hurt me, but I loved it. But I knew I needed to stop. And so I went to that first meeting, and I grabbed on. I got phone numbers. I called people I didn't even know who talked to me, some for hours. I met people at meetings. I got a sponsor, and I started the steps. I counted days. I was still dating this French girl, and, you know, like, we can go anywhere in sobriety. In my first 90 days, I was able to count days in Berlin and Paris because I already had a trip to go see her. That relationship eventually didn't work out. But, you know, we're still friends, and that's, like, another tribute to this program. Like, we're still friends. She still talks to me. I thought about someone else's feelings. It hasn't all been easy. I don't know too many people who it has all been easy, but, like, you know, this year especially was a really tough one for me. Well, this past year, I graduated from law school, and I was living in Trinidad for a year, which was tough for me. My girlfriend dumped me. She's a jerk. No, just kidding. She's really nice. I'm sure she's fine. But, you know, it was a really hard year for me, and I just sort of reached this point of, like, what am I going to do with my life? Like, I don't even know. I don't know if I want to be a lawyer. I don't know if I can be a lawyer. And I was so depressed. And when I was in Trinidad, you know, I still worked with my sponsor over Skype, and I went to meetings where, like, I couldn't understand what people were saying because of their accents. But I went. And, you know, I was still really, really depressed and anxious. But I kept going. And, you know, there were times in my program when I would think, like, I'm not going to drink today, and I'm not going to kill myself today. And that was, like, all I could guarantee myself. And at the time, it felt like I was really failing at AA. You know, I had close to 4 years sober, and, like, the best I could do was not drink and not kill myself for, like, a 24-hour period. But that's huge for me. And, you know, like, those were the two things I did. Like, when I was a kid, I really used to think about killing myself, and then I discovered drinking. And I was just like that Bill in the Big Book, you know, like, I wouldn't jump. That disgusted me. I went back to the bar. And I remember thinking about young people committing suicide and thinking, like, I would never commit suicide. This was when I was, like, 22. I would never commit suicide. I would just stop holding back on drugs and alcohol. Because, like, for some reason it would be better for my family if I was, like, a junkie, you know? But I just thought, you know, that's fine. I would just, if it got to the point where I wanted to commit suicide, I would just try to be fucked up all the time. And I changed, and I was able to, like, walk through this period of sobriety. And it wasn't a short time. It was, like, 6 months. And I, like, when I was in Trinidad, I was so anxious. I would wake up, like, physically shaking every morning at, like, 5 a.m. And I say this because it was, when I was going through this, it was really important for me to hear about people in sobriety going through suicidal thoughts and going through depressions of long-lasting variety. That said, like, things have fallen into place. My higher power has put things in my way that have really helped. I took a job to take a job, and getting up every morning has made a huge, like, getting up every morning and going to work and being of service and not thinking about myself for, like, 10 hours a day is awesome. And on top of that, like, I'm working at a law firm. I really wanted to go into public interest law, but I got this job offer at a law firm, and I just thought, they said, like, let's do a month trial, and I did the month trial, and I'm staying. And the thing is, like, I didn't want to be a litigator because I thought it was too hard. And I thought I couldn't do it. And I used to tell people, like, I want to do something else for these other reasons. But really, it's like my own inadequacy. I didn't think I could do it. And I just got thrown into this situation through a gift of the program. I won't totally get into, like, how that is. But, like, I got thrown into this situation. And I did it. And I like it. And I feel capable now. I feel so capable. And it's like, you never know what's going to help you. And, like, I'm better now. And it's not just because of this material thing, but it's like I took action, and I took action, and I took action, and I took action, and I finally acted my way out of the rut I was in. I finally have a sponsee. Just for you late bloomers like me, it took me like 3 years to fully get through the steps because I kept on breaking up with my sponsors until I found just the perfect one. And you know, what I like about her is I'll finish up soon, I know. She never tells me what to do. She tells me to pray. And that wasn't what I was looking for in the beginning. I was looking for someone to tell me what to do. But in my experience, your sponsor ought not to be your life coach. And if he or she is, they'll eventually be wrong about something they tell you to do. And then you're going to have a problem. So, like, my sponsor turns me to my higher power and tells me to look within. That works for me at this point. And, you know, we got through the steps. I had, like, a million week-long sponsees who didn't call me ever again. And it's just, like, another little zinger from the universe. But I have a male sponsee now. And he's the only willing person I've had the opportunity to work with. And he's a godsend. And I used to always, I would judge the shit out of people who had non-same gender sponsees. I don't know, it really bothered me, and it's just like fitting that I should get that. And I'm not saying like what's right for anyone else, but like it works for us. And you know, to be able to like give back. And you know, I do it just like my sponsor does it for me. Like anytime he has a problem, I'm like, pray about it, like talk to your higher power. And it's so much easier doing it that way rather than like, I don't try to solve everyone's problems anymore. I don't even try to solve my own. Like, sometimes, so much about AA is just, like, not reading into my own feelings. Because, like, my feelings are fucked up. And if I try to think my way out of my fucked up thinking, it's just, like, it goes in this horrible circle. Whereas, like, I can get up in the morning and make my bed. That's something I can do that is a positive action every day. And I just do it, and I put one foot in front of the other, and I stick around the rooms. I have friendships here. I show up for commitments. And, you know, one day at a time, I've got some time together. And, you know, when I think about drinking, and I still do sometimes, I think about you people, my friends, and, you know, the people, my sponsee, the people who rely on me. And I also think of peeing everywhere. So I want to end on exactly that note. Thank you.